Bottom of the ninth. Save situation. It emerged from the trees on the left side of the road, and Trisha's first thought was, is that all? Is that all it ever was? Grown men would have turned and run from the Ursus Americanus, which lumbered out of the last screen of bushes. It was a fully grown North American black bear, perhaps 400 pounds. But Trisha had been prepared for some awful horror torn from the underside of the night. There were leaves and burdocks caught in its shiny fur and held in one hand. Yes, it had a hand, the clawed rudiment of one at least. Was a branch from which most of the bark had been stripped. It held this like a woodsy wand or scepter. It came to the middle of the road, seeming almost to paddle from side to side. It remained on all fours for a moment, and then, with a soft grunt, rose to a stand on its rear legs. When it did, Trisha saw it was not a black bear at all. She had been right the first time. It looked a little like a bear, but it was really the god of the lost, and it had come for her. It peered at her with black eyes that were not eyes at all, but only sockets. Its tan muzzle scented at the air, and then it raised the broken branch it held to its mouth. The muzzle wrinkled back, revealing a double row of huge, green-stained teeth. It sucked at the end of its branch, reminding her of a little kid with a lollipop. Then, with great deliberation, the teeth clenched upon it and tore it in two. The woods had fallen silent, and she heard the sound its teeth made very clearly, a sound like splintering bone. It was the sound her arm would make. If that thing bit down on it, when it bit down on it. It stretched its neck, its ears flicking, and Trisha saw it moved in its own small, dark galaxy of minges and no-see-ums, just as she did. Its shadow, long in the morning light, stretched almost to Trisha's scuffed sneakers. They were no more than 60 feet apart. It had come for her.
Run, called the god of the lost. Run from me. Race me to the road. This bear's body is slow, not yet filled with a summer's forage. Pickings have been slim. Run. Perhaps I'll let you live.
Yes, run, she thought, and then immediately came the cold voice of the tough Tootsie. You can't run. You can barely stand up, sweetheart. The thing that wasn't a bear stood looking at her, ears flicking at the bugs which surrounded its big triangular head, sides shining with healthy fur. It held the stump of its stick in one clawed paw. Its jaws moved with ruminative slowness, and little shredded splinters dribbled out between its teeth. Some fell, some stuck to its muzzle. Its eyes were sockets lined with minuscule buzzing life, maggots and wriggling baby flies, mosquito larvae, and God knew what else. A living soup that made her think of the swamp she had walked through.
I killed the deer. I watched you and drew my circle around you. Run from me. Worship me with your feet, and I may let you live.
The woods lay silent all about them, breathing their sour, urgent scent of green. Her breath rasped softly in and out of her sick throat. The thing that looked like a bear gazed down on her haughtily from its 7 feet of height. Its head was in the sky, and its claws held the earth. Trisha looked back at it, up at it, and understood what she must do. She must close.
It's God's nature to come on in the bottom of the ninth, Tom had told her.
And what was the secret to closing? Establishing who was better. You could be beaten, but you must not beat yourself. First, though, you had to create that stillness, the one that came from the shoulders and spun about the body until it was a cocoon of certainty. You could be beaten, but you must not beat yourself.
You couldn't serve up a fat pitch, and you couldn't run.
Ice water, she said, and the thing standing in the middle of the dirt road tilted its head so it looked like an enormous listening dog.
It cocked its ears forward. Tricia reached up, turned her cap the right way around, and pulled the curved visor low on her brow, wearing it the way Tom Gordon did. Then she pivoted her body so it was facing the right side of the road and took a step forward so her legs were apart, left leg pointed at the bear thing. Her face remained turned toward it as she stepped. She fixed her gaze on the eye sockets, looking through the dancing cloud of bugs.
It all comes down to this, Joe Castiglione said. Everybody fasten your seatbelts.
Come on, if you're coming, Tricia called to it. She pulled the Walkman off the waistband of her jeans, yanked the cord free, and dropped the earbuds at her feet. The Walkman went behind her back, and she began to turn it in her fingers, looking for the right grip.
I've got ice water in my veins, and I hope you freeze on the first bite. Come on, you busher. Batter fucking up.
The bear thing let go of its stick and then dropped back onto all fours. It pawed at the hard pan surface of the road like a restless bull, digging up clods of earth with its claws and then moved toward her, waddling with surprising, deceptive speed. As it came, it laid its ears flat against its skull, its muzzle wrinkled back, and from within its mouth, Tricia heard a droning sound which she recognized at once. Not bees, but wasps. It had taken the shape of a bear on its outside, but on the inside it was truer. Inside it was full of wasps. Of course it was. Hadn't the black robe by the stream been its prophet? Run, it said as it came toward her, its big hindquarters swaying from side to side. It was weirdly graceful, leaving clawed prints behind and a scatter of droppings on the surface of the packed earth. Run. It's your last chance. Except it was stillness that was her last chance. Stillness, and maybe a good, hard curveball. Tricia put her hands together, coming to the set. The Walkman no longer felt like a Walkman. It felt like a baseball. There were no Fenway faithful here, rising to their feet in the Boston Church of Baseball. No rhythmic clapping, no umpires, and no bat boy. There was only her and the green stillness, and the hot morning sunshine, and a thing that looked like a bear on the outside and was full of wasps on the inside. Only stillness. And now she understood how someone like Tom Gordon must feel, standing in the set position in the silence of the cyclone's core, where all pressure falls to zero and all sounds are shut out, and it all comes down to this. Fasten your seatbelts. She stood in the set position and let the stillness spin out around her. Yes, it came from the shoulders. Let it eat her. Let it beat her. It could do both, but she would not beat herself. And I won't run. It stopped before her and stretched its neck up so its face approached her face as if to kiss. There were no eyes, only two squirming circles, wormhole universes filled with breeding bugs. They hummed and squirmed and jostled each other for position in the tunnels that bored down toward the god's unimaginable brain. Its mouth opened, and she saw that its throat was lined with wasps, plump, ungainly poison factories crawling over the remains of a chewed stick and the pinkish lump of deer gut that served as its tongue. Its breath was the muddy stink of the bog. She saw these things, noted them briefly, then looked beyond. Veritech flashed the sign. Soon she would make her pitch, but for now, she was still. She was still. Let the batter wait, anticipate, lose his timing. Let him wonder, begin to think his guess about the curve was wrong. The bear creature sniffed delicately all around her face. Bugs crawled in and out of its nostrils. No-see-ums fluttered between the two locked faces, one furry and the other smooth. Minjas flicked against the damp surfaces of Trish's open, unblinking eyes. The thing's rudiment of a face was shifting and changing, always shifting and changing. It was the face of teachers and friends. It was the face of parents and brothers. It was the face of the man who might come and offer you a ride when you were walking home from school. Stranger danger was what they had been taught in the first grade. Stranger danger. It stank of death and disease and everything random. The hum of its poisoned works was, she thought, the real subaudible. It rose up on its back legs again, swaying a little, as if to beast music only it could hear, and then it swatted at her. Yet it was playful. Only playful as yet, missing her face by several inches. The passage of its earth-darkened claws breezed the hair off her forehead. The hair settled back light as milkweed puffs, but Trisha did not move. She stood in the set position, looking through the bear's underbelly, where a bluish-white blaze of fur grew in a shape like a lightning bolt.
Look at me.
No.
Look at me.
It was as if unseen hands had grasped her beneath the angles of her jaw. Slowly, not wanting to but helpless to resist, Trisha raised her head. She looked up. She looked into the bear thing's empty eyes and understood it meant to kill her no matter what. Courage was not enough, but so what? If a little courage was all you had, so what? It was time to close. Without thinking about it, Trisha brought her left foot back against her right one and went into her motion. Not the one her dad had taught her in the backyard, but the one she learned on TV, watching Gordon. When she stepped forward again and raised her right hand to her right ear and then beyond, really rearing back because this would be no lazy off-speed pitch, no ephus, this was going to be the heartbreaker, the serious bent cheese. The bear thing took a clumsy, overbalanced step backward. Did the squirming things which lent it its dim vision register the baseball in her hand as a weapon? Or was it the threatening, aggressive motion which startled it, the raised hand, the stepping forward when she should have been stepping back and turning to run? It didn't matter. The thing grunted in what might have been perplexity. A little cloud of wasps puffed out of its mouth like living vapor. It waved one furry foreleg in an effort to keep its balance. As it struggled to stay on its feet, a shot rang out. The man in the woods that morning, the first human being to see Trisha McFarland in 9 days, was too shaken to even try lying to the police about why he had been in the woods with a high-powered auto-load rifle. He'd been in the market for an out-of-season deer. His name was Travis Herrick, and he didn't believe in spending money on food if he didn't have to. There were too many other important things to spend money on, lottery tickets and beer, for instance. In any case, he was never tried for anything, or even fined, and he did not kill the creature he saw standing in front of the little girl, who faced it so still and so brave-like.
"If she'd have moved when it first come up to her, it would have tore her apart,"
Herrick said.
"It's a wonder it didn't tear apart anyways. She must have stared it down just like Tarzan in them old jungle movies. I come over the rise and see the two of them. I must have stood there watching them for 20 seconds at least. Might even have been a minute. You lose all track of time in a situation like that, but I couldn't shoot. They is too close together. I was afraid of hitting the girl. Then she moved. She had something in her hand, and she went to throw it at him almost like she was pitching a baseball. Her moving like that startled it. It stepped back and kind of lost its balance. I knew right there was the only chance that little girl had, so I lifted up my gun and I shot."
No trial, no fine. What Travis Herrick got was his own float in Grafton Notch's 1998 Fourth of July parade. Yeah, baby. Trisha heard the gunshot, knew it at once for what it was, and saw one of the thing's cocked ears suddenly fly apart at the very tip like a piece of shredded paper. She could see momentary squigglets of blue sky through the torn flaps. She also saw a scatter of red droplets, no bigger than checkerberries, fly into the air in an arc. At the same instant, she saw that the bear was just a bear again, its eyes big and glassy and almost comically surprised. Or perhaps it had been a bear all along. Except she knew better than that. She continued with her motion, flinging the baseball. It struck the bear dead bang between the eyes and, whoa, hey, talk about hallucinations. She saw a couple of Energizer AA batteries fall out of it onto the road.
"Strike three called," she screamed,
and at the sound of her hoarse, triumphant, breaking voice, the wounded bear turned and fled, lumbering on all fours, quickly picking up speed, shedding blood from its torn ear as it got into an all-out, fanny-wagging run. There was another whip-crack gunshot, and Tricia felt the slug buffet the air as it passed less than a foot to her right. It dug up a puff of road dust well behind the bear, which veered to its left and plunged back into the woods. For a moment, she could see the gleam of its shiny black pelt, then small trees shaking as if in parody of fear as it passed among them, and then the bear was gone. She turned, staggering, and saw a small man in patched green pants, green gum-rubber boots, and an old flapping T-shirt running toward her. His head was bald on top, long hair flapped down on either side and hung on his shoulders. Little rimless eyeglasses flashed in the sun. He was carrying a rifle high over his head, like a raiding Indian in an old movie. She wasn't a bit surprised to see that his shirt had the Red Sox emblem on it. Every man in New England had at least one Sox shirt, it seemed.
"Hey, girlie!" he screamed. "Hey, girlie! Jesus, are you all right? Christ almighty, that was a fucking bear! Are you all right?"
Tricia staggered toward him.
"Strike three called," she said,
but the words hardly reached beyond her own mouth. She had used up most of what she had with that last scream. All that remained was a kind of bleeding whisper.
"Strike three called. I threw the curve and just froze him."
"What?" He stopped in front of her. "I can't make you out, honey. Come again."
"Did you see?"
she asked, meaning the pitch she had thrown, that unbelievable curve that hadn't just broken, but snapped like a whip.
"Did you see it?"
I saw..."
But in truth, he didn't know what he had seen. There had been a few seconds in that frozen time when the girl and the bear had been regarding each other that he hadn't been sure, not entirely sure it was a bear. But that he never told anyone. Folks knew he drank. They would think he was crazy. And all he saw now was a delirious little girl who looked like nothing but a stick figure held together by dirt and ragged clothes. He couldn't remember her name, but he knew who she was. It had been on the radio and the TV as well. He had no idea how she could possibly have gotten so far north and west, but he knew perfectly well who she was. Tricia stumbled over her own feet and would have fallen to the road if Herrick hadn't caught her. When he did, his rifle, a .350 Krag that was the pride of his life, discharged again, close to her ear, deafening her. Tricia hardly noticed. It all seemed normal somehow.
"Did you see?"
she asked again, not able to hear her own voice, not even completely sure if she was actually speaking. The little man looked bewildered and scared and not especially bright, but she thought he also looked kind.
"I got him with a curve. Froze him. Did you see?"
His lips were moving, but she couldn't tell what he was saying. He put the rifle down on the road, though, and that was a relief. He picked her up and turned her so fast it made her dizzy. She probably would have thrown up if there had been anything left in her stomach. She began to cough. She couldn't hear that either, not with that monstrous ringing in her ears, but she could feel it, way down in her chest and ribcage, pulling. She wanted to tell him she was glad to be carried, glad to be rescued, but she also wanted to tell him that the bear thing had been backing away even before he fired his gun. She had seen the bewilderment in its face, had seen its fear of her when she went from the set to the motion. She wanted to tell this man who was now running with her one thing, one very important thing, but he was jouncing her, and she was coughing, and her head was ringing, and she couldn't tell if she was saying it or not. Tricia was still trying to say, "I got it. I got the save," when she passed out.